So I have been able and somehow managed to avoid coming up here to tell my story for 6 years. And at the last meeting, we had to put our names in the hat. There was four of us, and I'm doing the calculations. 25% chance only. I think I can, you know, I think I can maybe squeeze one more year, you know, out of this. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, but you know, if God wants me, Dan F. That was it. And I knew it. I got up this morning at 2:30 in the morning because just like in school, I always waited till the last minute to get anything done. And I knew all week I had to come up here and talk. And I'm fearful of it, little nervous. Keep your heckling to yourselves. But I got up at 2:30 and I says, okay, I got to do this. And I need to do something. So I sat down, opened up my computer and said, I got to write a speech. Now how am I going to do this? What should I talk about? I said, well, I can tell them my story. Yeah, but I got to tell them a little bit more than that. Okay. And then my sponsor always told me, you don't want to talk a whole lot about the story. You want to talk a little bit more about the solution. So I kind of broke this up into three parts. I'll tell you a little bit about my life, getting into drugs. And then I'll tell you a little bit about how this program has helped me. So I grew up on 22nd and National, normal kid, went to a Catholic grade school, did all the kid stuff and what have you. Life was good. And then I found out about the boys club, you know, a place to go, way to grow. I was all excited. So went off to the boys clubs, met lots of new kids, really had a good time. Was very active, sports, everything. Life was great. And I found out that they had a summer camp. And oh, I like camping. Yeah, it sounds good. So off I went to the summer camp, and I met, you know, more kids and had a good time, was very active. And some of the kids that I met, though, as we were starting to grow up and a couple more years went by, they were into smoking cigarettes. And I was like, well, I'm not doing that, you know. Well, one day I decided to try, and I smoked a Kool, which is probably the strongest cigarette out there, and spun around 10 times. Laid on the ground and was like, holy shit, I am really high. And I liked it. I liked it a lot. So we started smoking more cigarettes. And it wasn't long thereafter that a little Annie Greensprings kind of came into play. So here I am, smoking my Kool, spinning around, getting high, drinking Annie Greensprings, puking my guts out. Yeah, this ain't really that great. But yet, I still liked it. So from there, I graduated high school, graduated grade school, and I love summer camp. So I chose a high school that was basically away from home. I went to St. Lawrence Seminary, thought about maybe becoming a priest, but really what I was doing is escaping, not escaping home, but getting away from home. I liked being out on my own. I enjoyed that. While in high school, my mom had sent me some cookies, and they're really, really good cookies. And so I shared them, and one day a guy comes up to me and says, I'll trade you a joint for 6 of those cookies. I'm like, damn, I ain't never really smoked pot, but he really likes these cookies, so okay, I can do that. So in high school, you couldn't smoke unless you were a senior. And it was a $4 fine for every time you got caught smoking. Well, I was up in the hundred and some dollar range by then. Got caught all the time, smoked all the time. Gotten some little bits of trouble and what have you. But all in all, I was still doing really well. I was doing well in school, and things were great. And then I smoked that first joint with a couple of guys and caught my first high. And I was like, wow. A lot better than that Kool cigarette and drinking Annie Greensprings, I'll tell you that. So I continued to get in small bits of trouble, and eventually got in a lot of trouble because I was a lookout guy when some guys were stealing some cigarettes from the little store that they had up on at school. So the next place I ended up was Thomas More, another Catholic school, all guys. And at this school, I was really scared because I was in the middle of my junior year and I didn't know anybody. And the first guys that I met were the stoners because they were the guys that, hey, come on over here. Who are you? They always welcomed you and stuff. So I kind of ended up falling into that group of the stoners. And I liked it. They were nice guys. We got high every lunch hour. It was cool. So after I graduated high school, I went on to college. And again, met some really nice people. And then I really met a bunch of guys that were into the smoking dope and what have you. And they all lived on the 10th floor. And I told my parents, I want to go live in the dorms. Even though I'm going to school in Milwaukee, I wanted to live in the dorms. And I did for my sophomore year. And what happened was the first day I was there, I moved all my stuff in. And I was in the bathroom in a stall. And I hear this, and a bong comes sliding up. And I'm like, oh, I'm with my peoples. You know, this is great. So I continued to go to school, continued to just get high all the time. But I was always doing well, so I thought, I can handle this. I'm normal. This is just all part of, you know, life. Throughout all of this, really struggled with meeting girls, talking to girls, and I always felt very shy. And I had the ability to talk. I had the ability to sell. I manipulated people, you know, throughout all my schooling and what have you. Somewhere along the line, I went to a party, and I was introduced to cocaine. And I liked it, and I thought it made it, I thought it made me popular because I could talk to everybody. You know, that's the way it seemed to me. But I noticed one other thing. Everybody liked this stuff. Everybody had to have it. So at this point, I decided in my infinite wisdom of knowledge, I should sell this stuff because I can make money and my stuff will be free. So that was the first start of my being a drug dealer. And I was a good drug dealer. I was an honest drug dealer. And I didn't think anything about it. And I started wheeling and dealing, selling drugs. And what I realized is everybody loved me. When I walked in the door, damn! And I'm thinking, wow, this is great. Everybody likes me. Not realizing that everybody likes what I'm bringing to the party, not me. So I continued to party, continued to be the drug dealer, or as I used to call it, the party coordinator. So the next thing that happened to me is I was working at Wisconsin, graduated college, working at Wisconsin Electric, and buddy of mine was telling me about this bar that was for sale. Nobody could buy this bar. Nobody. 60 people tried to buy it. Nobody could get a liquor license there. And I'm like, fuck, I'm Danny. I can get a liquor license there. Sure as shit, between the two of us, we ended up getting a liquor license. Long story, lots of funny things happened in between there. So the next thing I know, I'm done working at Wisconsin Electric. I'm on my own. I'm going to own a nightclub. And I had a nightclub. And it went great. And things started to progress with the drinking and the drugging a little bit more and the partying. And then I got to know the guys from the radio station because we had to advertise. And I was able to trade drugs for radio time. Ooh. So now I'm starting to wheel and deal with all of this and what have you. So I continued to escalate my drug dealing, my using, still thinking all along, I'm just a normal person having a good time with life. And then one day with the radio station guys, I was on my way to Summerfest in a limo riding with, I forgot what rock star, and it was a rock star. And he looked at me and goes, you must be the drug dealer. And I thought, fucking A, that's what I am. I'm a drug dealer. And I got out of the car. I mean, I was just fed up. I didn't want to have that label on me. I didn't want to be a drug dealer. That's not me. Yeah, guess I was a drug dealer. And I kind of figured that. And then one day, I was selling drugs to a girl who just got out of the hospital, just had a baby, and she's over there holding her infant, begging me for drugs with what little money she had, and I sold them to her. And after she left, I told myself, I'm never selling drugs again. I'm hurting people. I found out later that a guy that I had sold drugs to, he died, overdose. Now I really feel bad. That's it. I'm done with these drugs. I am absolutely done. Well, except I might do a little bit of them. You know, because I'm not hurting anybody except myself if I do a little bit. So I continued to do drugs, continued to do the bar business, and my life was absolutely spiraling out of control. So I decided it's time to move. So I packed up, moved with my brother out to Las Vegas, because, you know, there's a really good spot right there for somebody that's trying to get off of drugs. So while in Vegas, I got a new job, new career, started things, and of course, gravitated right towards the drug guys, you know, just somehow I seemed to find all the drug people, and there were quite a few of them out there. So again, continuing this spiraling nightmare of drugs and alcohol and drinking, I decide it's time to move one more time. Let's go to Houston. So I moved to Houston, and I liked it there. It happened to be during a time in the economy where you could get an apartment for about $85 a month, and a really good apartment for about $110 a month. So I had a lot of extra cash because it didn't cost very much to live down there. Work was good. Things were going well in my life and what have you. Met my next door neighbor. Guess what? Druggy. Next thing you know, tried my first hits of ecstasy. Oh yeah, that was some good stuff. Started doing all the other stuff along with it. So then I decided, you know what? I think it's time to move back to Milwaukee. I'll be safer there. Decided it's time to get married. You know, maybe that'll tone me down. You know, I'll get married, have some kids, I'll get rid of all the drugs. No, instead I go back to dealing because I need extra money because now I'm married, now I got kids, now I got more stuff to, you know, deal with and what have you, and life just continued to spiral out. So that's when the lies really started, you know, and I titled this The Big Lie. This was the name of that I titled on my little speech today. The Big Lie, yeah. So I remember the first time my wife caught me, and it was the first time that I had done crack, and I couldn't talk, you know? And she goes, "Are you drunk?" And I'm like, smart guy I am. "Yeah, I'm drunk." Yeah. Don't want to tell her I'm doing drugs. Drinking's a little bit on you, okay? So I'm thinking, she doesn't know. Cool, I'm good with this. Continued to start using, to use crack, and really got hooked on it. I mean, hooked bad. And crack was just the ultimate high the first time, and after that, it was pure misery for me. I couldn't wait to get out of work to do it. I couldn't wait to get home, to grab some money and run out and do it. And I couldn't wait to not come home because I didn't want to get caught. I mean, nobody knows I'm fucked up. You know, I'm hiding this thinking to myself, nobody knows. You know, because going into the basement at midnight to do laundry, that's not a sign. Going outside to the garage to work on projects at 1 a.m, that's not a sign, you know. One of my biggest ones, honey, I got to go to Menards. 5 times a week I'd go to Menards, but never bring anything home from Menards. And that's not a sign. I go into the bathroom, I do some drugs, or if I was out, I'd call my pager because I was on call a lot with work, walked out, beep, beep, oh, honey, I got to go to work. Yeah, not a sign. I got paged a lot to go to work. And then the real nightmare kind of started, and that's when I stopped attending family functions because I wasn't feeling good. Nobody would know, you know, what the problem is. Yeah. At least that's the way I thought because I was living the lie, and nobody knew. I could hardly sleep on the weekends, so I came up with the brilliant idea that I got to stop using on Friday nights and sleeping away to weekends. I'll start using on Wednesday and Thursday. That way I'll be good for the weekends. Well, that turned into Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And it continued to escalate. I thought I might have a problem when I spent all my daughter's college money on drugs, but that's okay. I can make that up. I mean, nobody knows that I'm doing drugs. After all, I go to work every day. I pay the bills on time. I have a house. I pay for that. I take my wife on a vacation, take the kids places. I mean, I'm perfectly normal. Drugs are just a small part of my life. Just a small part. So, at the peak of my non-existent drug addiction, I was doing drugs every day. I'd be high going to work. I'd be high after work. I'd be sneaking out all the time. I was sneaking around everywhere. And yet, I still believed that nobody knew. That I was absolutely living this lie and perfectly normal. And I started seeing some other signs. Life insurance literature was coming to our house every day. What's up with that? Kids don't want to go anywhere with me. Why is that? Wife didn't want to sleep with me. Well, maybe I just smell bad because I've been drinking a lot. And yet I still didn't want to admit that I had a problem. And that life was really not what it should be. Because you know what? I paid my bills and I went to work every day. And that to me said that I was normal. I was okay. So basically for the next 20 years, it was a roller coaster ride of rehab, treatment, relapses, until I found this place, Razor's Edge. I went to my first meeting here and I didn't do drugs. I went to another meeting the next week. Still, no drugs. So I kept on going to meetings and no drugs. Hey! Seems go to a meeting, don't do drugs. So then one day I decided, I'm good. I don't need to go to meetings anymore. Guess where that led me? Back to the drugs. So now I'm like, okay. Another year goes by. My wife says to me, when were you the happiest in your life? And I said, when I wasn't doing drugs. She goes, then why don't you go to a meeting? I was like, all right, good idea. So I came back to the meetings. But it was bugging me because I can't understand, how does a meeting keep me from doing drugs? I'm an engineer by degree. I need to know why something is. I need to know the root cause. I need to know those kinds of things. And I struggled with this for the longest time. I kept going to the meetings, but I didn't understand, why does going to a meeting keep me clean? You know, I don't understand. So as I learned more things in the meetings, as I heard more stories, as I went through the 12 steps, what I realized is that, you know, the meetings are more than just a chance to sit down and talk to somebody else. I mean, there's a lot more to it. And I really had to accept that I had a higher power and accept the fact I'm never going to know why meetings keeps me clean. Just keep going to them. I don't need the explanation anymore. No different than I need to know, is there really a God? I believe in him. Is there, you know, does everybody have a higher power? Absolutely. Is there a heaven? Absolutely. I believe there is a heaven, and someday I will be there. So yeah, when it comes to meetings, I don't know why it works, but just keep going. And that's what I truly believe. I know it's the whole program that makes it all come together and work, but in my simple mind, the most important part of this program are the meetings. I mean, I do setup every week. And at first it was because, you know what? I do this setup because it makes me come to the meetings. I have this responsibility. Now as I do the setup, I realize that if a newcomer walks in that door, I want to make sure he's got a hot cup of coffee and a place to sit down. I want to make sure that if I'm the only person here and he's the only one that shows up, that we can still have a meeting. It gives me responsibility. And for me, that's a really important part of the recovery. Let's face it, without the meetings, you can't find a sponsor. You don't learn about the disease. You don't have a chance to tell your story or tell somebody else who's going to understand exactly what you're going through. You won't find out what else is going on around town to fill in that vacant time of yours. You won't get a chip to let everybody know how well you've been doing. And you won't get a chip that makes you proud within yourself of how long you've been clean. So in the beginning, I kind of titled this speech, The Big Lie. But in closing, I'd like to rename it the Big Truth. Because the truth of the matter is, in this program, it works if you work it. So with that, I'd like to tell you to keep coming back to the meetings. I need them, and I hope you all do too. That I'll close.
Okay, at this time, we'll close with the meeting. Dan, would you want to lead us into the Lord's Prayer? Dan?
Fall down.